Welcome to As It Is, a 30-minute program designed for English learners. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world.
A militant group linked to Al-Qaeda terrorists said it attacked a vacation area in Ivory Coast on Sunday. Six attackers with weapons killed 14 civilians and two soldiers. 22 people were wounded.Site Intelligence is an organization that examines terrorist websites. It reported that an anti-government group in Algeria called Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb, or AQIM, said its members carried out the attack. Site said AQIM called three of the attackers heroes. Ivorian President Alassane Ouattara called the attackers cowards. He visited where the attacks took place and said all the attackers were killed. Jean-Baptiste Bougre works at a hotel next to the attack area. He says he saw a gunman arrive. The attacker wore military clothing and carried a military weapon. He says the attacker shot people, including children,and women. Witnesses said the gunman looked young and carried many weapons. Marcel Gouy survived the attack. He said an attacker asked a man if he was going to a mosque or Muslim religious center. The man said he was, and the gunman did not shoot him. When the gunman asked another man if he attended a mosque, the man said he did not. The gunman shot and killed him. Witnesses said militants walked to the beach of one of the three hotels that was attacked, called the Southern Star. The hotel was reportedly filled with people from other countries. The attack is the third deadly shooting in the past few months in West Africa. In November, gunmen attacked a hotel in Mali. In January,armed men attacked a hotel and a restaurant in Burkina Faso. Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb has also claimed responsibility for those attacks. A third bombing in the last 6 months shook the capital of Turkey this past weekend.The Turkish government responded with airstrikes against Turkish rebels in northern Iraq. Pete Musto has more.
Dozens were killed and wounded in an explosion near the main square of Ankara on Sunday. At least 37 people were killed and 125 people were wounded and treated at hospitals around the Turkish capital. 30 people were killed on the spot, and 4 others died in hospital, said a member of Turkey's health ministry. During the late night, 3 more people died at medical centers. The explosion took place near Kizilay Square, near foreign embassies and government buildings.It was the third bombing in the capital during the past 6 months. An Interior Ministry official said the blast was caused by a car bomb. The bomb was set off between buses to cause greater injuries and deaths, he said. Another government official in Turkey told the Associated Press that police said the attack was carried out by 2 bombers. Police think one of the bombers was a woman. Police suspect Kurdish militants. There has been no claim of responsibility for the violence. The attacks targeted the Kurdistan Workers' Party, or PKK. That news came from the state-run Turkish news agency. 9 F-16 and 2 F-4 jets raided 18 positions against PKK. Police also carried out raids in southern Turkey and detained suspected rebels. President Recep Tayyip Erdogan said the fight against terrorism will continue and his country will defend itself from attacks. PKK has fought a 30-year guerrilla war against Turkey. PKK wants more autonomy for the Kurds in southeastern Turkey. The Islamic State group has been blamed for bombings in Turkey. IS was blamed for a suicide bombing at a peace rally in October. I'm Pete Musto.
Both the United Nations and Amnesty International say South Sudanese soldiers and their militias have committed crimes against civilians. Ann Ball has more on the human rights violations taking place in the area.
The United Nations accuses South Sudanese soldiers and militias of using rape as a weapon against women. And Amnesty International says government forces suffocated men and boys in a shipping container to kill them. In its report, the UN Human Rights Office says the soldiers used a scorched earth policy against the civilian population. It calls the scale or level and type of sexual violence one of the most horrendous human rights situations in the world. Between April to September 2015, the UN recorded 1,300 reported rapes just in the oil-rich Unity State alone. The report says sexual assaults are carried out with extreme brutality. Girls and women of all ages are the victims of multiple or more than one gang rapes. Some women are then killed, while others are taken and held in sexual slavery as wives for soldiers in barracks or military housing. Rupert Colville is a UN human rights spokesman. He tells VOA that youth militia with ties to the government are being allowed to rape women instead of being paid wages.
It seems they're not being paid. They're just being given carte blanche to rape and to steal cattle. And then basically those are the two sort of bits of war bounty they get, to the women and the cattle. It's really an unbelievable picture, and then nothing being done, apparently, by the government to stop it.
Colville warns that the rape, killing, and pillage will continue until people are punished for the crimes they commit. Colville says more than 2 million people have been forced from their homes since South Sudan's civil war began in December 2013. In a separate report last Thursday, the human rights group Amnesty International accuses South Sudanese government forces of suffocating at least 60 men and boys in a shipping container last October. Amnesty International says government forces loaded them in a shipping container on the grounds of a former Catholic church in Lear Town. Michelle Kagari is Amnesty's deputy regional director for Eastern Africa.
We have multiple witness accounts who could hear these people banging on the walls, shouting, screaming.
Witnesses told Amnesty that the containers did not have any air holes. Amnesty says evidence shows that government forces outside the container kept the detainees locked inside, even after some had died. Again, Michelle Kagari.
The act of leaving men in a container, clearly in distress, having knowledge of their distress, having the ability to do something about that distress, and allowing the men to eventually die of suffocation, that act is a war crime irrespective of the status of the people.
Amnesty International researchers went to the location where witnesses said the bodies were dumped. They were able to identify human remains. In an interview with VOA, South Sudan's presidential spokesman, Ateny Wek Ateny, denied government involvement in these crimes. Our forces did not commit or did not kill any civilians in October, he said.
However, we do condemn anyone who killed civilians in the strongest term possible. But in this case, our forces did not commit any atrocities in the United States.
The warring parties in South Sudan agreed to a peace agreement in August 2015. But fighting, killing, abductions, sexual violence, and attacks on civilian property have continued to happen in parts of the country. I'm Anne Ball.
The United Nations Special Diplomat for Syria said Monday that continued peace talks are the only way to prevent a worsening war in Syria. A new round of talks are part of an international plan to reach an end to the conflict. Mario Ritter has this report.
Russian President Vladimir Putin has ordered Russian forces to withdraw from Syria, Russian state media report. The move comes on the same day that United Nations peace talks begin in Geneva, Switzerland. Putin told his defense and foreign ministers that the task of Russian forces in Syria had been fulfilled, according to Russian state media. Putin said the withdrawal would begin March 15th, but no time limit was given. A Russian government website said Putin spoke to Syrian President Bashar al-Assad by telephone. It said they had agreed to withdraw the main part of the Russian Air Force group operating in Syria. The website said Russia would maintain a post for supporting aircraft that observe the ceasefire in Syria. However, a U.S. official told VOA that so far there is no indication Russian forces are getting ready to pull out of Syria. Earlier, the UN diplomat for Syria warned that failed peace talks will result in an even worse war than we had so far. UN Special Envoy Staffan de Mistura began a new round of peace talks Monday in Geneva. De Mistura said it is up to the people of Syria to decide their future, and the UN must help them. He said the UN plans to hold talks with each side for about 10 days. The next round of negotiations would start again in early April. The envoy said he believes this will map the peace process. De Mistura said, "By then, we believe that we should have at least a clear roadmap. I'm not saying an agreement, but a clear roadmap, because that is what Syria is expecting from all of us." He also stressed the need to maintain what is called a cessation of hostilities, or ceasefire. That ceasefire, now over 2 weeks long, has permitted humanitarian aid into areas of conflict. But serious questions remain about what each side will accept to stop the fighting. More than 270,000 people have been killed since the conflict began. Millions of people have been forced to flee their homes. Many have risked their lives to reach Europe, which now faces a crisis of handling the refugees. Syria's foreign minister has warned that the future of Syrian President Bashar al-Assad is not negotiable. However, the opposition and other critics, including the United States, say Assad must step down. De Mistura said Monday there is much distance between the opponents. World powers, including the U.S. and Russia and Syrian neighbors, reached an agreement last year in Vienna. That has been the basis for these peace negotiations. That includes a call for a ceasefire and Syrians creating a roadmap for a new constitution and elections overseen by the UN. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry noted Sunday violence has been hugely reduced by 80% to 90% since the ceasefire started. But he accused the Syrian government of clearly trying to disrupt the peace talks. Kerry added that Assad's forces are the single biggest violator of the ceasefire. Rebel groups also have been accused of violating the agreement. Kerry spoke after talking with top British, French, German, and Italian diplomats in Paris about the Syrian crisis. UN officials say the ceasefire has allowed UN and other agencies to deliver food, medicine, and aid to 115,000 Syrian civilians. Those civilians have lived in areas under siege. They say last year, aid agencies were unable to reach any of these areas. But Kerry said he continues to be deeply concerned about the Syrian government stopping delivery of medical and surgical supplies. I'm Mario Ritter.
Next, Jim Dressbach brings us a report on job growth in the United States.
Job growth happened on the east and west coast of the U.S. last year, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. The HowMuch.net map shows that most jobs were created in California. The Los Angeles area produced more than 133,000 new jobs. New York City saw the biggest increase in employment. More than 150,000 new jobs were added in the New York City area in 2015. In Texas, the Dallas-Fort Worth area witnessed a job increase of nearly 100,000 in 2015. And in the Detroit, Michigan area, hurt by years of recession, more than 39,000 jobs were created in 2015. Over the past 6 years, businesses in America created 14 million new jobs. Nearly 2.5 million were added in 2014 and 2015. The lowest unemployment rate in U.S. history happened in 1953, when the jobless rate was 2.5%. Today, America's unemployment rate is 4.9%. But as jobs increased, the average hourly wage in America declined. Many of the jobs created since 2014 are retail and service sector jobs. Many economists believe those jobs are less secure than manufacturing jobs. States in the U.S. that lost the most jobs included Louisiana, North Dakota, Illinois, and Iowa. North Dakota lost almost 19,000 jobs in 2015. Most of those jobs lost in North Dakota were in the energy and mining industries, according to the Associated Press. I'm Jim Dresbach.
A Palestinian teacher has won a teaching prize worth $1 million. Kathleen Strzok has the story.
Hanan Al-Haroub, a teacher from the West Bank, won the Global Teacher Prize on Sunday. Pope Francis announced the award in a video. He talked about the importance of education and teachers, especially for children who have seen violence. Pope Francis said teachers were the builders of peace and unity. Al-Haroub told the Associated Press, "I feel amazing, and I still can't believe that the Pope said my name. For an Arab-Palestinian teacher to talk to the world today and to reach the highest peak in teaching could be an example for teachers around the world." At the awards ceremony in Dubai, Al-Haroub told the audience that teachers could change the world. Al-Haroub, who grew up in a refugee camp, is a specialist in helping children who have witnessed violence. She teaches at an elementary school in Al-Bire, near Ramallah, in the West Bank. Al-Haroub said she became interested in teaching after her children saw a shooting on their way home from school. Helping her children recover from that experience made her think about how classrooms can help other children. Al-Haroub was among 10 finalists. The 9 other finalists came from the United States, Pakistan, Kenya, Japan, India, Finland, Australia, and Britain. Al-Haroub had the other finalists stand on stage with her after her speech. Given to one teacher every year, the Global Teacher Prize is an award that recognizes a teacher who has made a contribution to the teaching profession. The teacher must use new classroom practices and encourage others to become teachers. The Varkey Foundation gives the award. Its founder, Sonny Varkey, established the GEMS Education Company, which has more than 80 schools around the world. Sonny Varkey said he hoped that Hanan Al-Haroub's story would inspire those looking to enter the teaching profession. I'm Kathleen Strzok.
This is What's Trending Today. In much of the United States, Sunday, March 13th, marked the beginning of daylight savings time. This meant many people lost 1 hour of sleep Saturday night. To help them ease into the time change, some Americans celebrated National Napping Day on Monday. The hashtag National Napping Day trended worldwide on Twitter and Facebook. Social media users urged people to take a nap during the day. They said the rest will help you deal with the loss of 1 hour's worth of sleep. Midday naps are common in some countries. There, long lunch breaks enable workers and students to rest after eating. The United States is not one of those countries. Many American workers take just a 30-minute lunch break. On National Napping Day, people on social media celebrated the health benefits of napping. Research shows the extra rest can help reduce day-to-day stress. Studies also show naps are good for your heart and can help you think clearly at work or school. But some people tweeted about taking naps when they probably shouldn't have been, such as during a class or at work. And not surprisingly, some of the most popular National Napping Day posts were of animals sleeping. And that's What's Trending Today.
March 14th is perhaps quietly celebrated as Pi Day, a day to honor the number many recall from geometry class. In case you are wondering, the date comes from the first three digits of Pi. March is the third month, followed by the 1 and 4 that make 14. Today marks the 28th celebration of Pi Day to honor the most famous irrational number, which has no end and shows no pattern. Pi appears wherever there are circles. Pi is a ratio. It measures a distance around a circle to its diameter. The diameter is the distance from one side of a circle to the point directly opposite in the circle. A website, PiDay.org, showcases little-known facts about the number. The site says, Pi has been calculated to over 1 trillion digits beyond its decimal point. As an irrational and transcendental number, it will continue infinitely without repetition or pattern. Pi has been known for thousands of years and gets its name from the Greek letter pi. The Greeks are believed to have used the letter to describe the ratio. They did not have Arabic numerals to calculate it, however. The first Pi Day was celebrated on March 14th, 1988. San Francisco's Exploratorium Science Museum started the event, according to the site. The museum marks the day with a day-long celebration, including a parade and something more substantial, real, edible pie. March 14th has other scientific links. It is the birthday of physicist and Nobel Prize winner Albert Einstein. Princeton University, where Einstein lived for many years, marks Pi Day as well. And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.